This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Bev Sellers is chief of the Soda Creek First Nation near Williams Lake, British Columbia. She's also a survivor of one of the most notorious Indian residential schools in the country. The St. Joseph's Mission at Williams Lake was operated by the Roman Catholic Church from 1886 to 1981. The school was operating at full capacity by 1950 with 300 Aboriginal students. Conditions at the school were harsh for the children incarcerated there. Eventually, 23 charges of sexual assault were laid against three individuals, priests, and a bishop. Bishop Hubert O'Connor was the main perpetrator of the assaults. Two boys are known to have died by suicide among a group of eight children who attempted. Grave sites are also reported north of school grounds and under the foundations of a tunnel-like structure, indicating further deaths during the school's operation.
Soda Creek First Nation Chief Bev Sellers was incarcerated at St. Joseph's School, as were her mother and grandmother before her. Sellers wrote a memoir titled They Called Me Number One, Secrets and Survival at an Indian Residential School. In it, she described St. Joseph's School and Bishop O'Connor, as well as the hunger, forced labor, and beatings with a leather strap that were common in the school. Bev's lifelong path towards healing has led to the first book to be written by someone who survived St. Joseph's School. Her book became a Canadian bestseller and was officially and publicly entered into the archives of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. In 2014, Chief Sellers received British Columbia's George Riga Award for Social Awareness. I spoke with Bev Sellers about her book in an interview first broadcast in early 2014. Here's the first part of that interview. So you've written a powerful and successful book about the intergenerational effects of your family's experience in St. Joseph's Mission School near Williams Lake, BC. Grand Chief Edward John of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues says of your book, quote, "Candidly and with brilliant clarity, Bev Sellers draws us deeply into her life while pointing a penetrating light into the darkest shadows of Canada's racist and genocidal residential schools. In her telling, survivors and the families of those who did not make it will feel their own stories." Can you tell us about the three generations in your family that were affected by residential school experiences?
My grandmother, who was born in 1896, was the first to go to the residential school. She was there for 9 years, and she saw all of her children, except one of them, my Uncle Ernie, was sent over there, but he got TB, and they sent him home. They used native medicines and managed to cure him, but he's the only one that didn't go to the school because he was too sick to do any of the work, I guess. She saw all of her children and then all of her grandchildren go to the residential school, and it was finally, my children are the first generation that weren't required to attend the school, so it's had quite a devastating effect on our family and our whole community, and actually right across, I mean, you start thinking about it, the Aboriginal communities across Canada and the United States and even into Australia, that had a devastating effect on it, but within my own family, it was three generations.
The St. Joseph's Mission School, where you went, was a particularly destructive residential school, including the sex-related offenses of Bishop Hubert O'Connor, who was in charge there during the 60s. When the school was closed in 1981, former residents reduced the building to rubble, and it's still in ruins.
Actually, you know, word got out to the communities surrounding Williams Lake that they were going to sell it. The Oblates were going to sell it to a ranch or something, and they invited people from the communities to come and get any pictures that they might want. They had pictures of different students and whatever. I went there looking for pictures that I might want, but didn't find any. Some people found some pictures of their grandmothers and whatever, but I went there one day, and the school was intact when I left. And then we started hearing of people going there and just destroying everything in there. I went back the next day, and I was just amazed at the destruction of the building. And I wasn't amazed that people destroyed it and, you know, and just took their anger out on the building. That's not what amazed me. I was amazed at the destruction of that huge building in one night, but it was everybody's anger coming out, and there wasn't a door that was left on its hinge, or it was just, it was amazing.
That was a powerful demonstration of the energy.
It sure was, yeah. That indicated what the school was about. There were no happy memories, you know, like, I mean, we made friends and we had a few moments that were good, you know, like skating in an ice rink or whatever, where we were one of the few times we were allowed to mix with our brothers and sisters. But the demonstration of what the people, former students, thought of that school was so evident in that one overnight thing, and they just destroyed the building.
You had the additional trauma of spending 2 years at Kokolitsa Indian Tuberculosis Hospital near Sardis when you were only 5 years old. Were you there before you went to St. Joseph's?
Yeah, it was 2 years. I was there for almost 2 years before I went to St. Joseph's Mission. I went when I was 5 years old and came out when I was seven. And I was home for 3 weeks. Before I was required to go to St. Joseph's Mission, required by Canadian law, to attend the residential school where I spent the next 5 years. So in the time I was 5 to 12 years old, in total I only spent 11 months in my home community.
That's so hard to even imagine for someone of that age.
Oh, I know. I think, you know, oh my goodness, you don't really realize it until your own children are that age. And oh, if somebody tried to take my kids away on me, you know, at five or six years old, I mean, that would have destroyed me. And especially if I knew what was going to happen to them at the school. But our parents and grandparents were, you know, they would have been put in jail. And there were some parents that were put in jail for not releasing their children, for not giving up their children. They tried to hide them, but eventually they ended up at the schools.
Yeah. So what kind of sense did the five-year-old you make of your experiences in a TB hospital?
I just have this one vivid memory. I mean, Sardis to me, if I could describe Sardis in one word, it would be loneliness. And of course, I didn't realize I was sick. I have certain memories of the school, you know, not of being beat or anything, but just of being lonely and wondering whether that was going to be my home forever. I didn't understand why I was there. It was difficult, you know, for a five-year-old to be there. And I don't remember anybody explaining anything to me. And I always wondered.
Your grandmother and your mother were also at the residential school in their time. How did that affect their parenting and their ability to help you with the difficulties that you had?
Well, my grandmother, I mean, I think she was the rock that I needed, and, you know, the grounding I needed to make it through what I went through later on. You know, they both learned to parent at the residential school and had, you know, I think about some of the things my grandmother did, and she was a very supportive person, but, you know, there were certain things that she did that I realize now that were harmful to me as a child. If she didn't go to the school, she probably would have raised me in the traditional way, which was a better way, but her mom died when she was 9 years old, and she has very few memories of her mother, so she never really got the opportunity to learn from her mom how to really parent in the traditional way. And my mom, you know, and so it just kind of, as the generations, my grandmother to my mom, you know, got a little worse, and my mom ended up drinking and, you know, whatever, like so many parents who've had their soul of the, you know, taken out of them by taking their kids away. So
yeah, I'm a parent and a grandmother, so I have difficulty even contemplating that.
Mm-hmm. I know my daughter, when she had her son, and he was 5 years old, and she realized that's what had really hit her, you know, what had happened, and she just cried and cried. You know, obviously they didn't take him, but just the thought of it. So there's a lot of pain, you know, people's hearts were ripped out by taking their children away from them.
What allowed you to deal with it well enough to be able to write the story of your time in St. Joseph's?
It was when I was in, you know, Kamloops, and I discovered, you know, books that helped you work your way through emotions and kind of connected how your childhood affects your adult life and everything like that. And then it was when our tribal council started to examine the after effects of the residential schools in 1993 that I started to connect the dots. But I think the thing that helped me, really helped me, was writing the book. And it wasn't meant to be, like, I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to write a book about my time spent at the schools. It was more or less a bunch of notes to begin with and connecting the dots and really understanding what the schools have done and how destructive they've been to our communities. And that is the biggest thing that helped me through and work through all of the anger and the pain. I mean, I'm still angry and there's still pain, but it's I've been able to process it and deal with it in a different way instead of in a destructive way.
Indian residential schools are a part of our shared Canadian history, but it's a history that is not well understood by many. Canada's relationship with Aboriginal people has suffered as a result of the residential school system. Soda Creek First Nation Chief Bev Sellers has written a memoir detailing her experiences at the notorious St. Joseph School near Williams Lake, British Columbia. Her book went on to become a Canadian bestseller and was awarded the 2014 George Riga Award for Social Awareness. Bev Sellers spoke with People First Radio in early 2014 about her book. Here's the second half of that interview.
I had the good fortune to attend your reading in Nanaimo, and I listened to the questions and the sharing after your talk.
Yeah.
It was obvious that many people resonated with your experiences. How is it for you when that happens?
And that's been common wherever I go. I've had so many Aboriginal people tell me, that is my story, or you've put into words what I wasn't able to express. And so I'm really happy for that, because a lot of times before I wrote the book and before I started connecting the dots between my childhood and my adult life, I really didn't understand why I did certain things or why it affected me. And so if I'm able to help others think about their actions and help them overcome the dysfunctional behavior that I had as well, you know, I'm happy for that.
So what things were important in your own healing journey?
Well, I had a lot of anger, really a lot of anger. That way, I think that was the biggest thing. And I didn't have high self-esteem. I was really shy, painfully, painfully shy, because I didn't think very highly of myself. So those two things, I think, finally realizing that there's no reason for me to think any less of myself than than anybody else. I'm as good as anybody else. And also learning how to deal with the anger in a productive way and not just blowing up all the time, you know, or keeping it under wraps until I can't keep it anymore, and then just blowing up. So those two things, I think, the anger and the self-esteem are really the important things.
What kept you from succumbing to despair?
I did. I attempted suicide when I was 17, and I talk about in my book a couple of other, I call them half-assed attempts of suicide. And when I started putting those other attempts of suicide into time frames, I was shocked to find out that I was 14 14 and 15 when those other attempts were made. I never thought about it. I knew I did it. And so I did. I was in such a deep, dark hole for a period, you know, and it was my daughter she was born when I was 18, and I have two younger sons as well, and they are the ones that gave me a reason to live. And that's, you know, I've started slowly crawling out of the black hole I found myself in because of them, and eventually got to the place where I am today because I, you know, they gave me a reason to live.
Nothing like having children to be motivated.
Yes, that's for sure. Yeah.
In May of 2013, there was a reunion in Williams Lake of survivors of the St. Joseph's Mission School. A monument was erected and many workshops and events occurred.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that the Tsatsil First Nation was not listed on the sponsors of that event. Was there a reason that you didn't get involved?
I thought we were involved.
Maybe you were. I just was looking at the website, so I could have missed that.
Oh, no, we were involved. We, Chief Fred Robbins came around to our tribal council, and maybe we're included in the Northern Shuswap Tribal Council. I don't know.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
There were some collective titles there.
But we're there, and, you know, when those monuments, before they were even unveiled, they were put in a place in Williams Lake where there's a park there where a lot of our people, you know, they're called street people,
mm-hmm.
But there are relatives and there are friends, and we love them dearly. But they gather in the park and they drink there, and this one lady was walking by and asking what they were doing, and they told her, and she got really upset. She says, "Why do you want to put that there? That just makes me want to go and get another, buy another bottle of booze." Reminders like that. There are people that have not dealt with the, you know, their issues at the school. So it's kind of hard. You know, we're starting to start talking about it, and hopefully that will change. But there's still a lot of people that are still hurting out there. That's another reason that I wrote the book, is because people are too quick to condemn the people on the streets without understanding how they got there. They had a lot of help to get to where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't matter what nation you're from, you know, the people on the streets, they need some understanding.
I was looking at some of the videos that were posted on the reunion site, and there was, in one, a man was talking about his experiences. And he raised his two hands up and he said, "How can you get over it?" And to me, that was so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And that's a question that I was asked as well. Have you gotten over it? And I agree with him. I don't think I'll ever get over it. How can you? You know, this is just a part of our lives that goes so deep to the core of who we are, and we're struggling, you know, and it's changing slowly, but yeah, how do you get over it? I don't think anybody can. And mm-hmm. and you can get to a point where you can function, you know, in a good way in your life, but there are still things that trigger me sometimes. You know, some days I do my presentations without getting too emotional, and other times it something, I'm not sure even what, you know, will trigger me and I'll break down. So it's tough, but I just accept it and move on and get on with the presentation.
I think that must be an important aspect, is that you accept yourself, whatever emotion you have.
Yeah. Well, for too many years, you know, we just shut down any emotions except for anger. Anger seemed to be the only one that was, people could do it, you know, and that was it, you know. Any other emotion was shut down to survive. So it's really difficult allowing yourself to start feeling all of the emotions that normal human beings feel. I accept, if I break down, I break down. So what? You know, that's part of who I am.
So we just have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that you would like to add?
Well, you know what? I really hope that this book will be used in all the schools, not because it's my story, personally my story, but because it's part of Canadian history, and because it could be the story of people in Nova Scotia or the United States or Australia. You know, humans are humans, and we need to understand what was done to the Aboriginal people. And the books, that the history books that they have in the curriculum now, you know, are not doing it. This book needs to be in the curriculum, and it needs to, you know, this part of Canadian history. It's not just Aboriginal history. It's Canadian history, and Canadians need to really understand who they are, and not this, you know, they go, Canada goes out and know we're the peacekeepers of the world and whatever. Canadians really need to understand who they are, and this book will kind of fill in the blanks there.
I listened to your your short talk and your presentation of a copy of your book to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and saw it being placed in the special chest and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked the question in your talk, how will the Truth and Reconciliation Commission affect the well-being of Aboriginals in Canada? And I think that's a really good question.
You know, a number of years ago in the 1990s, there was the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, and some volumes of work came out of there, and some really good work examining all of the issues, you know, that Aboriginal people are trying to deal with, but it went nowhere. You know, it just still sits there. It wasn't acted on, you know. And so I wonder whether the Truth and Reconciliation is just kind of lip service again to Aboriginal people. And Harper made an apology, I think it was in 2009, but yet nothing. You can't say you're sorry and not, you know, fix whatever is wrong. So I wonder whether the Truth and Reconciliation is just going to be paying lip service again to Aboriginal people. And I hope it doesn't, but, you know, we'll see.
Bev Sellers is chief of the Soda Creek First Nation near Williams Lake, British Columbia. She's the author of They Called Me Number One, Secrets and Survival at an Indian Residential School. That memoir is both a Canadian bestseller and the recipient of the 2014 George Riga Award for Social Awareness.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.